Hello and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that when I traveled this weekend, I brought like six with me, even though I was only gone for 3 days.
Yeah, I love books so much that I built a shelter out of them to keep me out of the cold, even though it was like 50 degrees.
Lies! You were chilling out in your undies like, why is it so hot?
That's true. I'm like a polar bear. Actually, more like a walrus, but with smaller teeth.
You have littler teeth than me.
That's true.
Look at my little teeth. So actually, before we get started this week, we actually have some listener mail that we'd like to...
Oh my god!
We have a listener!
That's right, we have proof that we have one.
We have one fucking listener.
Well, he's now our new favorite listener. Thanks, one listener. Kevin sent us an email. I think we referenced that last time, but we didn't talk about content at all. And I would say the gist of the email is, hey guys, good job. I haven't listened to some of the episodes yet because I haven't hunted the books down yet. Also, sometimes your podcast starts to sound like a book report. How can you make it more interesting?
Yeah, and then I was like, shut up, you're not my real dad.
Yes, after Gabs wept for 3 days, just kept constantly screaming, Kevin, you're not my real dad! I finally calmed her down. And she was able to write a response to him. Mostly civil, even.
No, we thought, I thought that was a fairly good point that he made about that maybe some of the less listened to episodes are just because people are trying to read the book first. Because he is one of those fellows who does not like spoilers.
Right. Yeah, I always forget to take that into account. I forget that that's a thing sometimes. Yeah.
Well, one of our other listeners, she always listens to the podcast and then decides if she wants to read the book after listening to the podcast.
And that's another way to do it.
Yeah, so...
I have a movie podcast I listen to with basically that same intent.
Yeah. But yeah, so we might try to do a bit more flying by the seat of our pants, perhaps?
Yeah, we're going to have to think about how exactly we would do that and get everything in we want to get in still. But it's not a bad idea. A thought I had was maybe kind of along the lines of our year in review podcast, where maybe we each come up with a few separate ideas and bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if it's just a silly list, that might give us some talking points.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking is that we might sound more book reportish on books that we don't care as much about. It did occur to me that when we're tired and talking about a book that we both liked okay, that we might just start going, list, list.
Yeah, that's true.
So we need to do better at drumming up enthusiasm for...
That's true. Sometimes we're both sitting here yawning because it's late-ish, and we both worked a lot. Usually it's because I had to be at work at like 5 in the morning or something that day.
And then we're like, there were jokes in Catch 22.
That episode came out better than I thought it did while I was recording it. That's for sure.
But yes, we are taking that into account. If any of you have any suggestions, or if you agree with Kevin that sometimes we're bored as shit, which is not what he said.
The quote taken dramatically out of context. While being paraphrased.
Then please let us know. That will be something we explore in the future.
Indeed.
So thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. So anyway, to get on to this week's book, we read The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah, and just because I was reminded of it, we do have a spoiler policy that we never talk about.
That's true. I think people pretty much figured it out by now, but... The spoiler policy, in case someone new is listening to this, say a year from now when we explode the internet and get popular and people retroactively explore the archives. Everything. That's right. Our spoiler policy is we spoil the shit out of everything. We want to talk about the whole book. This isn't really a review and leave things open so you can go read it and decide this is more of a, we want to talk about everything, so we'll spoil stuff if we feel like it,
mm-hmm.
which mostly we do.
Yeah. and spoiler for this book, which turn off the podcast now if you don't want to know, is that Esterman, one of the two, I would say two characters of import, dies at the end.
That's true.
Like, he, real dies, not...
Yeah, he gets shot.
By a sonic gun?
I think he gets shot by a real gun.
No, he's shot by a real gun.
A 4A gun.
Yeah, the 4A, but those aren't, like, real guns.
They are.
Like...
They say they fire little pieces of metal. Those are totally real guns.
What are the ones that fire, like... It's like force field things.
Those are sonic guns.
God damn it. Fine. Foiled again.
The book's so much, Gabs didn't read this book.
I totally read this book.
You read the Wikipedia article.
I finished it yesterday. I don't know how I don't remember it.
Oh, well.
So, the reason we chose this book, which I think we mentioned at the end of... one of our podcasts, is because it's April, which is LGBTQ Awareness Month, or Celebration Month, or I don't know, whatever it's
called. I'm not sure what the official title is, actually.
As usual, we did not bother to look up the official name.
We are living up to our research standards here. We should hire an intern.
We really should. We can't really pay them.
And by hire, I mean force someone to be our intern.
Intern application? I'll give you chocolate every week. That's the best I can do.
That's not bad. That's not a bad deal.
But we chose the book because the premise is that it takes place on a planet where none of the people on the planet have gender or sex, I guess I should say. They literally have no penises or vaginas until they more or less go into heat once a month.
Yes.
Called Kemmer. And we thought, well, you know, that deals with sexuality issues. It's not straight up LGBT, but kind of along the same variation.
Yeah, the whole gender bending idea is certainly in that realm of conversation.
And we also wanted to read more science fiction by a woman after our experience with Connie Willis.
Amazing.
So that's why we picked up this book.
That's right. And so I guess we just gave it away.
I spoiled it.
Yeah, the genre is science fiction. there's a foreword to this particular edition by Ursula K. Le Guin, talking about predicting the future and how mostly that is not the job of science fiction writers, and the future that they write about usually reflects their opinions about current society.
Yeah, she basically just kept saying, it's not our job to predict the future, stop reading books like that.
This was even the days before, like, message boards and the internet, I'm pretty sure, too.
Yeah.
She's like, stop sending me letters, I know.
And she even makes a funny point about, like, it says it's taking place in these years on this place, but is it really?
Yeah.
It's just fiction, yo.
Yeah. It's just a story, man. Read it for entertainment. So, our...
plot synopsis.
Totally fair, balanced, and highly thought out plot synopsis for this book is two dudes wander in the snow.
Yep.
Because that's basically like 100 pages of a 300-page book.
Alternatively, OMG, it's cold.
Yeah, that comes up a lot.
That's a theme throughout the book.
Well, it's on a winter planet. Basically, a warm day is any day above the freezing point of water. He's talking about how hellaciously hot it gets in the summer, because sometimes it pings 80 in this particular city.
Yeah, and the native to the planet at some point says, he has to wear a coat when it's 30 degrees outside.
Right.
Like, what's that about?
I wear a coat when it's 30 degrees outside. And I'm essentially an Arctic animal. I have a layer of blubber. I hibernate for the winter.
Well, you did say you were a walrus, so I guess it's fitting with the theme. Do you want to go ahead and give a brief summary of the book?
Sure, an envoy, Genli Ai, or possibly Genli Ai, is trying to bring the planet Winter, or Gethin, whatever you want to call it, into...
Confused yet?
Yeah, into... Oh, there. By the way, Ursula K. Le Guin loves science fiction-y sounding names, by which I mean ridiculous sounding names.
Yeah.
So, Genli is trying to bring this planet into the Ecumen, which is some sort of governing body for all of humanity, though it's not really a government. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
He's in the nation of Karhide, or Karheed, or Karheedy, or Karheidi. We don't know that either. And the political tide turns against him and the other, like the not quite co-protagonist, but the other character of any import, Estravan, who is the prime minister, and they both have to flee the country because of this. And they both go into the neighboring country of Orgarin, or Orgarine, or...
Orgorian.
Orgorian. And the political tide turns there, too. And Genli gets sent to basically a Siberian prison camp.
Yeah.
Estravan busts him out, and they wander across 800 miles of ice and snow to get back to Karhide so Genli can call down his starship and prove that he's actually an alien.
Yeah, the big thing is that Karhide doesn't believe that there are species on other planets and that they're all connected somehow because he's just one dude. And so it comes out that there's a spaceship full of his people hanging out near the nearest star or whatever, and if he calls them down, then they'll come down in their spaceship, which, to the people on this planet, is amazing, because they don't have anything that flies.
Right.
Like, animals or anything.
Right.
So something coming up out of the sky is like, woo!
And so, thus convinced, Karhide joins the Ecumen, and presumably the rest of the planet falls in line behind them sometime in the near future.
Mm-hmm. So it's happy.
Yeah. And Estravan dies, which we already mentioned.
So whatever.
That's right. So the setting of this story is the planet Gethin, which
as the natives call it.
Frequently referred to as Winter by the envoy. And in the two countries of Karhide and Orgarain, Karhide is more or less a monarchy, though it sounds like the kind of monarchy where the king isn't quite fully in charge. It's not parliamentary, but it sounds like his advisors have some checks on
him,
maybe.
Yeah, the prime minister does get to make a fair number of calls.
Yeah. And then Orgarain is a bureaucracy kind of in the it's like kind of a cross between a strong arm oligarchy and fascism in the 1930s Germany sense, minus the creepy racist elements.
Yeah, because like in Orgarin, you know, in order to cross over the bridge, you have to have all your papers and passport in order, and they check over all that, and then they like, well, you first get to apply for a passport, which can take months.
Right.
You get it, you pass over, they check it out, they stick you in a house overnight so they can check it again in the morning. If it pans out, you go to the new place and it gets checked again, and again, and again, and again.
Yeah.
And if you're undocumented, they basically send you to a work camp where, presumably you just...
Where eventually you work or freeze to death.
Yeah.
Well, not work to death, freeze to death, mainly.
Or get poisoned.
Pisoned.
The point of view is first person, mostly around Genli, I, and Estravan. And Estravan's are written journals, whereas Genli's are spoken records. I think she mentions in the book that the people of Karhide, try not to read if they can help it.
Oh.
I thought she mentioned that at some point.
That
they prefer oral tales.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She
so
did,
they don't read.
She did mention that. Though I gather that Estravan's position in his clan is why he keeps the journal. It's like a record-keeping thing that is expected of him.
his older brother would have been the heir,
mm-hmm.
but then he died, and now their son, am I remembering this correctly?
That
brother
sounds,
was his lover?
Yeah, that's right. You're allowed to do that on Gethin, until you bear a child, essentially.
Yeah. And you're not allowed, incest between in the same generation is allowed, but between generations is not allowed. So, like, siblings can do it, but not, like, mother, child, or whatever.
As we look uncomfortably around the room.
Well, I mean, the other thing to mention is that we're, you know, saying, like, his older brother,
right.
But they're not actually guys. Ursula K. Le Guin uses he and his as a placeholder for talking about people, but it doesn't actually stand for this is a man, and
yeah.
this is a brother, and this is a son.
We don't have the appropriate pronouns to describe what they really are, and maybe she just thought calling everyone it was too rude.
Yeah, because it makes it sound more impersonal, I guess.
Yeah.
She could... The new thing is to use Z.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Instead of he or she.
I have not heard that one before.
Yeah. But, so, you want to think of these two people who have no sexual organs, then once a month they enter the Kemmer state, which is their, I don't want to say going into heat, because it makes it sound like they're a dog, but...
It's basically their time of the month.
Yeah, like, their cycle.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, also
and it is linked
on your period.
To the lunar cycle.
And if two people in Kemmer at the same time are around each other, one will develop masculine parts and one will develop female parts or feminine parts, and then they can get impregnated. And if you get impregnated, then you maintain the female body until you...
Right.
Have the kid.
Right.
And
most of them, over the course of their life, both father and bear children.
Yeah. Yep. Because at one point, Genli asks a character, how many kids do you have? And they say, well, I sired three, but I haven't born any. And
yeah.
Pretty bummed about it.
Yeah.
And we get a chapter on the investigators who are just checking the planet out before they ever, you know, made contact with anyone, and they said that they can't really tell if there's any rhyme or reason to one developing one or the other, and that they think there might be some couples that will both be man or woman, but it doesn't seem very common.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, for the most part, whoever starts to favor one over the other, the partner reacts to it and their body takes them in the mm-hmm. opposite direction.
And I like, they're talking about perverts, so there are some people in their cultures who tend to kind of stay one or the other, even out of the Kemmer cycle.
Yes.
Either through, you know, drugs or just because they do, because they're...
Naturally occurring.
Yeah, a little different. And they're the perverts, because they're always ready for sex.
Yes.
So Genli is a pervert, because he's...
Right.
From... Well, he's...
They, well, Earth, not everyone buys that he is from another world, and so some of them just think he's a pervert in some sort of trick being played on the government.
Yeah, yeah. So Genli is actually a he...
Yes.
And then everyone else is sexless.
Yes. Everyone else is a he once a month for a day or two at best. Sometimes.
Yes.
So Genli is, in fact, the protagonist.
Yes.
Estravan doesn't... He gets a lot of time. We get to see him first person about every other chapter for a good chunk of the book. But the plot doesn't really revolve around him.
Yeah, the plot's all about Genli's mission to bring the Ecumen to the planet, so...
Yeah, and I think to a degree also about him...
Discovering
this weird world.
Mm-hmm.
This bizarre world of no gender.
Well, at the beginning he's, like, totally out of his element and confused by it, and by the end he totally gets it.
Yeah. And so, the book opens at a... ceremony where they're putting a keystone in some form of arch, obviously. Yeah. I don't remember what it's for. But the king himself is personally putting the stone in place and mortaring it in. And Gendly is remarking on how interesting that is, because obviously in most of our human ceremonial types of, like a building opening, or, hey, we're going to finish this bitchin' arch. the person who is ceremonially putting the keystone in place would, like, pat it on its side while a crane lowered it in and then walk away and let the workmen get to work. And the king actually sits there and mortars the whole damn thing on both sides.
Yep.
So we're... Basically, this ceremony is there to illustrate that... well, to introduce us to the couple of most important characters and to illustrate the... kind of alienness of this world, in sense the sex gender thing isn't coming up just yet at that point. One thing it keeps coming up is that the Gathenians are very patient people compared to Earth humans. Like, their trucks don't move more than 25 miles per hour.
Just because.
And if you ask them, why don't you make them go faster? They kind of go, why would you want to go faster?
Yeah, and then Gendly goes, I guess it's like if you went to someone on Earth and said, why don't you drive your car slower than 60 miles an hour?
Right.
Why? Well,
but it goes faster than 60 miles per hour.
I like fast. they're slow, patient people, and they also have a really strict set of honor and, what am I looking for? Rules on how to interact with each other.
Yeah, especially in Karhide, though in ordering they're still at least partially in place. And so they have a system of honor called Shifgrathor.
good job.
Yeah, which seems to be mostly a way of interacting where you don't reveal what you're actually thinking directly under any circumstances.
Yes, as far as I can understand, and I kind of had a tough time, but if someone says, I lift or I wave Shifgrathor, then the other person's allowed to say what they think to you.
Right.
So it'd be kind of like if you were in polite company and someone was talking to you, and then you said, dude, it's cool, you can just, like, tell me straight.
Right, yeah. And there are a couple little cultural things appended to that. Like, if you give someone advice, that's considered very insulting.
Yeah, and speaking directly is actually also not how it's done.
I think it's not only crass, but, like, offensive in the sense of if you do that to someone, you're basically treating them like they're a moron.
Yeah.
That's kind of my impression.
And for the first half of the book, Gendly, his relationship with Estervin, he thinks, well, this guy's playing me. He never gave me straight answers. He, you know, wouldn't give me the advice that I needed, all this stuff, and he's offended. And then later on in the book, after he and Estervin meet up again, Estervin is pissed at him and gives him advice to try and slide him. And then he says, I've been trying to help you this whole time.
By the standards of Shifgrathor, I was being extremely straightforward, you dumb foreign idiot.
Yeah. You stupid, dumb idiot.
But this, I was on Gendly's side for that conversation. It's like, he doesn't know the rules, dude. Help a brother out.
Come on.
Come on.
Gendly, I. Yeah, so... That didn't really have anything with characterization, I just realized.
Oh, well.
But mostly the reason for this is that the characterization in the book is not... The book's not really about characterization. Like we said, Gendly and Estervin are pretty much the only two characters that you get too much from.
They're the only characters to have some form of relationship in this book. And it's not... I guess it becomes kind of a friendship by trial sort of thing, but it's almost more of a rapport than it is an open friendship. It's just not like the personality traits, you know, she throws a couple in there. Estervin is very precise. He's very careful. He's really good at what he does. He's like, I think we have 78 days of rations. And he had it down to, like, exactly.
Yeah.
And Gimli, I don't know if I could name a personality trait of his. I don't know if one stands out enough for me to say this is a way he is compared to other people.
I was going to say, as far as Earth humans go, he's basically just a person. Mm-hmm. He's alien to people on Gethin, excuse me, but not to us. He's kind of just a stand-in for a dude, I think.
Yeah, it feels that way.
Because, you know, at points Estriban mentions, oh, this is something he does, and it's basically just like how people tend to react.
Right. And I think the purpose of the book is to examine relationships on a societal level rather than on an individual level anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that in just a minute. Let's hit the other characters. There are only maybe a half dozen who get enough page time to be worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
There's King Argaven. Argaven?
Argaven? Argaven?
Argaven?
Argaven?
Argaven? Supposedly he's insane, but you see no proof of it.
Yeah, his main deal is just he doesn't really believe Gimli's from another planet, and he's pretty skeptical of this whole
He's pretty thing. Scared, I think, is the thing that keeps coming up over and over again. Yeah. Is that fear rules him. And again, I think probably if you viewed all these characters through the lens of what facet of society they represent, that would be a lot more useful than trying to characterize them.
Yeah. And he, at one point, to prove that he is not strictly a he actually gets pregnant in the middle of the book, but then loses the baby.
Which is not any better for his sanity.
Yeah.
and then on the Orgarin side, there are a handful of commensals. I don't know.
As commensals.
They're basically commissioners of some sort or another, and they are the government that is. It's a legislative body, but all of the power is in the hands of these 30-odd men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, men. People.
People.
Yeah. And they can do whatever they want. There are some factions within, of course, and some backbiting and whatnot. But we meet Obsul and Yege and a kind of obnoxious guy named Gom, who is apparently the, if not the head of the secret police, then a player in the secret police, mm-hmm. which is referred to as the Sarf, if it comes up again later. and we don't know tons about them. Let's see, I think Obsul was the, he was kind of the more timid one. Yege was the loudmouth, direct one.
Yeah.
And Gom was, well, basically the generic secret policeman in every book.
Yeah. Essentially, their role is to take, well, they take in Estriban, and then they take in Gimli because of Estriban. And Gimli is trying to convince them to join the Ecumen because he didn't succeed with Qarhide, but they're too cautious, and they hit a point where they either have to get rid of him, they have to get rid of him to save themselves, or
right.
let their own down.
And so they do, not entirely unexpectedly. And there's a gentle being, named Fax. Who is, I guess, they as much as they have leaders, the head of a group of the Honderata, which is a religious, philosophical, it's more of an Eastern type religion, I think,
mm-hmm.
Where there's not so much of a whole worship a god thing going on as a here are ways to control your inner life sort of thing.
Yeah.
And runs a foretelling group and ends up as the prime minister by the end of the book.
Yeah.
And he has a handful of interesting things to say about foretelling and knowing the future. And
yeah, the foretelling process, Gimli thinks that it'll be really useful for the Ecumen And he's trying to figure out if they're telling the future, if they're reading people's minds, if they're, like, you know, trying to kind of deduce the whole thing. But he thinks, well, if you ask the right question, then this is really useful. And he and Fax have a conversation about it. And it's basically the whole thing where when someone can tell the future in a book or a movie, then the person who can do it usually says, well, you don't actually want to know the future.
Right. It won't necessarily make you happy. Like, we'll be part of the Ecumen in 5 years. Within 5 years, like you asked, but I'm still afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just knowing. And this version of foretelling seems pretty labor-intensive anyway. So it's not like you can just read every little detail.
It's a big tribal ritual, and it's a very classic type where, you know, you ask a question and they answer your question, but they don't necessarily answer it the way you want. So you say, you know, when will I die? And instead of giving you, like, the exact day or year, they'll say, this day of the month.
It'll be on the 19th of a month.
And then another guy goes and asks, when is this guy gonna die? And they say, he's gonna die after you.
Sigh.
Yeah. So you have to be really careful, because otherwise you're going to get all of the tricky answers that always lead people in stories to create their own device.
Though the element of this version of future telling that I liked, that I thought was interesting, was that if you ask an unknowable question and they're foolish enough to answer it, then the whole group of foretellers basically goes insane.
Yeah.
And dies of it.
Yeah.
But no, that's a twist. So they decide if they're even willing to answer your question before they give you your weird gnomic answer.
Yep.
Let's get into the good stuff.
Yeah, some more issues. We already talked about Kemmer and all that jazz.
So start with the Ecumen, which is a... I guess it's the governing body for humanity, but they don't have... They don't really vote on things.
They're not really a government. They watch out for everyone, but they don't really, like, put any sorts of rules on you.
Yeah, they facilitate trade, which is mostly trading of ideas, because they have instantaneous communication, but they do not have faster-than-light travel.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to take goods to another planet, it could take you decades, whereas you just want to send along the blueprints for an awesome idea you had, you can do that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So they facilitate that. They provide advice, but they don't have a military. War would be pretty impractical across light years anyway.
Very peaceful. And, they're just kind of like these benevolent... And they're... I was going to say overlords, but they're not overlords. Mm-hmm. They're benevolent. They keep people happy and trading with each other and from fighting. And
it sounds like the trade of ideas has been extraordinarily beneficial for every society involved, because everyone has things to contribute. And obviously, if you suddenly have 80 odd planets of new knowledge opened up to you, you're going to learn some interesting and useful things.
Yeah, and Genly makes the observation when he's on Karhide or on the planet that, this is a monarchy. We used to have monarchies. This is an oligarchy. Or a
bureaucracy.
We used to have bureaucracies.
He's like, wow, I never thought I'd get to see a real live monarchy and bureaucracy in action. And sure enough, there they are. And those two forms of government definitely form a contrast to the Ecumen, which is as hands-off as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a monarchy, which is... it sounds like traditionally fairly hands-off by the standards of a monarchy, because it's a pretty clannish society. And then you have the bureaucracy, which in typical bureaucratic fashion has regimented everything and is very invasive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when he initially enters Orgeron, he thinks it's the much more civilized place.
Genly does, yeah.
Yeah, Genly does, because of the order that they have.
Yeah, and they give him, like, a hot shower.
Right.
And he's like, oh, yeah! But then he starts realizing, like, the people in that country are all kind of sheep because they're so forced into their way of life.
There's something not quite right with them.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention about this is that we're saying, you know, the Ecumen Ben said, the Ecumen is overseeing humanity. And it really is a humanity. It's not like various alien races. These are all, as far as we can tell, different types of people.
Yeah, this was one of the more interesting parts of this universe to me, is that every planet does have humans. And one of the reasons that they are skeptical that Genli is, in fact, from another world is because he looks like them.
Uh-huh. He's a little darker.
Yes.
Than most of them.
But within the range, normal range of variance, yeah. Still. And so he's a little darker, a little taller, and fixed in this male state, but there are certainly people on their planet who would match that description. And he makes comments about other forms of humanity on other planets. Like, there's a version that can fly, apparently, and there's some planets where the mind powers that apparently all humans have in this universe are...
Yeah.
Slightly stronger, more likely to pop up at birth, and just lots of different forms of humanity, and not necessarily all of them can even interbreed,
mm-hmm.
or at least as far as siring children goes. Presumably the parts all match up still. In my mind, they do.
Yeah, and the investigators or the body, you know, they mention that they think this kind of creating race went around and, like, stuck people on different planets and gave them different things, basically. Yeah,
like, some different colonies were different experiments for them. Which is an interesting idea that I would like to see explored farther, but it doesn't happen in this book, that's for sure.
I think that was really interesting.
Yeah, it was. Let's see here. The Hondura, which we touched on with the foretelling, is... So, I just wanted to throw a couple points of interest about them that I enjoyed, but the idea that claiming ignorance is considered boasting among them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then the idea of, their form of meditation trance, instead of trying to empty their mind or, like, trying to take in everything without processing it, I guess, is how I kind of interpreted it. So, again, kind of like these more... Eastern philosophical type of ideas. They always are saying it's nothing.
Yeah.
They have a word for it that I don't remember off the top of my head.
Nusith.
Nusith. Yeah. And then the foretelling thing, which is a completely different animal.
Yeah, there's not really a religion on the planet. Like, this is kind of one of the closest things they have. Because I think at one point, Genli mentions, you know, well, people go to war for religion, but on this planet that can't really happen because there's not really anything to put out there.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of war, one of the big points of interest to Genli is this planet's never had a war.
Uh-huh.
They don't know. They don't even have a word for it. They don't know what it is.
Yeah, they pretty much until he's been there for a little bit, they've never even had, like, a mass killing.
Yeah, at worst, it sounds like there's been some clan-on-clan violence occasionally in the past, but, like, a conflict where more than a handful of people are killed is completely unknown to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're having, like, there's some skirmishes in a disputed valley while he's there, and I think, you know, about a dozen people get killed in one of the raids. And that's, like, a really big deal on this planet. Which, by the standards of Earth warfare, is, not, unfortunately, is nothing. Yeah. And then he keeps theorizing that this lack of warfare is related in some way to there not being sexual tension all the time.
Yeah. Basically, there's not sexual tension on the planet because you're either completely non-sexual, or while you're in Kemmer, you leave work. Like, when you enter it, they basically just say, go off and do your thing, and you go find other people in Kemmer, and you do your thing for a couple of days, and then you go back to your other state, and then you go back to doing everything you did, and all that stuff's off your mind.
Right. So, especially with her forward to the book, is this Ursula K. Le Guin saying, hey, folks, we need to be more open about our sex.
Yeah, because one of the things Genli mentions is everyone on the planet is super open about going into Kemmer and having sex, and they talk about it all the time, and no one's embarrassed about it.
Right, and it keeps them out of war, apparently.
Yeah, And as one of the investigators on the planet noted, is because no one's in one state or another, no one's inherently valued over someone else. Which has obviously been a historical problem on Earth with male-dominated societies. They say that everyone has to be valued just for who they are. Which the investigator thought was quite disturbing. But...
There was a quote from the book that I'm trying to find that I can't.
Oh, that yeah.
I'm just gonna go ahead and paraphrase it. But one of the interlude chapters was from a previous investigator talking about this weird gender situation on the planet and about how, you know, usually when you meet people, you expect sexual attraction to be part of how they take you in. If you're an attractive person, you kind of expect to be admired, even if it's covertly. And how here, everybody values people on their qualities as a human being. And says, it's appalling.
Appalling,
here
yeah.
You are judged sheerly on your value as a human. It's appalling. But that's kind of funny.
That's silly.
That's funny.
And speaking of which, the fact that no one has a gender, we kind of mentioned this earlier, that everyone's referred to as he, but that doesn't mean that they are he's. And this was something that I just started having an issue with.
Bothered the crap
out
of you.
Yeah, it really started bugging me, because even though I knew that everyone on this planet was not a he, because that was all I saw, I just started feeling like there were no female characters in the book.
Right.
I mean, the point is that there are no male or female characters, with the exception of Genli.
Right.
Kind
of an interesting choice for the female author to make the one gendered character a man, though.
Yeah, and I just kept going, oh my god, they're not all sons, they're not all fathers, they're not all brothers, like...
Right.
they're genderless, like, surely they have a word for that.
Yeah, that was also, I mean, that's part of your point that I agree with for sure, is that with all the made up words in this book, she couldn't come up with a couple of new pronouns.
Yeah, and it might have been weird at first, but I think you've gotten used to it pretty fast.
Oh, I think so. And I mean, pronouns get used all the frickin' time, so
yeah.
You would have seen the couple of words 100
constantly,
times apiece.
Yeah.
So we definitely wouldn't have had trouble keeping up with that.
So I can't complain about the lack of female characters in the book, but at the same time, it just
right.
felt like that.
It felt like you were overwhelmed with he.
Yeah, it felt like I was just reading about a society of men, which I knew wasn't, like, that's the whole purpose of the book, is it's
sure,
not.
Sure, sure.
But it just bothered me.
And then this got tacked on. This probably should have come up earlier, because that would have been a better place to leave off where this were, but the concept of patriotism, because these two countries with different forms of government are starting to have clashes and looking like they might be on their way to discovering war, and Genli and Estravan have a conversation about patriotism while they're crossing the 800 miles of ice and snow, and the gist of the conversation is, why should somebody, you know, love a place just because they were born there? Like, what is it actually, what does patriotism mean? Like, it seems to strike Estravan as kind of a null term.
Yeah, Estravan says, does loving my country mean hating all the other ones?
Yeah.
Which isn't the case for him. Which, I mean, is a fairly good point. Like, you know, are you proud to be an American just because you were born here?
Right. And well, I mean, and over the course of the book, I think he does eventually reveal that he has a preference for Karrhyd that he doesn't really understand. And so he feels this patriotism in some sense, just not in that uber nationalistic sense that you usually think of patriotism in. And I mean, believe me, I sympathize. Try to have a nuanced opinion on patriotism in front of certain people.
Yeah.
Try to have a nuanced opinion on anything in front of certain people, for that matter.
If you don't chant USA, you're a douche. yeah, and Genli even says at the end of the book that that he and Estevan weren't working for Carhide. They were just trying to do what was best for the people.
Right. They were working for humanity.
Not love of country, but...
And not even necessarily humanity on Gethin. Humanity maybe everywhere.
Yeah. Even.
Because Genli, I think, has a legitimately held belief that humanity, the other 80-odd worlds, are better off for having another world added to their ranks.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, that said...
Yes, moving on.
Themes, I guess.
Yeah. So, well, to lead off, a common theme, especially in science fiction, oppressive governments suck.
You've never heard us talk about that before.
Nah, we've never discussed dystopia or anything. So Orgarin is a society just begging to have a dystopian story take place in it, I guess.
Yeah.
But probably joining the Ecumen will prevent that from happening.
With that whole episode with the truck, that was pretty fucked up. When Genli gets shoved in the truck.
Oh, yeah, people. Getting transported. Well, that basically...
It's basically a Nazi...
I'd say that basically was a Nazi cattle car right there.
Power of friendship, kind of. We were struggling with this one a little bit because Genli and Estevan do become friends, but it's not really a power of friendship thing. It's more like them working together and struggling together helps society.
Right, and so, I mean, just trying to make it power of friendship, we're just talking about having a nuanced opinion, like trying to wrap it up that simply is not... I mean, you can't really do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are definitely, since they're working for humanity and then they're working with each other for common cause, they definitely have a rapport. They definitely reach a pretty strong understanding of each other. And I mean, I would call it friendship. Genli's upset. Estevan gets shot to death at the end because, again, like the political... governmental part of things is still fucked up at this point, and so he's still not allowed to set foot on his own country's territory.
Yeah.
And so he gets shot trying to recross the border, because, well, at this point, both sides are a demilitarized zone, essentially, just staring at each other across the border. So, let's see. Honor as... Maybe this is not a stronger theme.
Yeah.
Not as strong as those first two themes, for sure. But honor is kind of an impediment to success and communication at times, which I actually think is a fairly common theme in books. Because the honorable person is either the one who stands on a principle for the benefit of everybody, even if it's at the cost of personal pain to themselves.
Yep.
Or it's the person who's so stiff-necked they won't be flexible when they clearly need to be flexible. And in the case of this book, that is still true. It's just the inflexibility is in the form of, we're going to have these really labyrinthine conversations that are impossible to interpret if you didn't grow up living it.
Yeah. Where you're like, what are they?
But it results in, I mean, because of that, Genli makes the wrong political moves that he could have been prevented from making.
Yep.
And, I mean, ultimately, you could argue that leads to Estevan's death in the long run.
I guess so.
He kind of did it to himself, if you want to play the, oh, man, I can't come up with the word. It's too bad. It was going to be a wonderful phrase. but if you want to play the blame game all the way back to the origin point.
Stupid Estevan.
Yeah. and then the idea of sex and violence being linked, which we were just talking about.
A world with no war has no sexual tension.
Right. Let's see. So, points of interest.
Yeah, a couple other things. There was this mind to speak. That's one of the things Genli brought to the planet that he thinks is super cool.
Yeah.
It's a way of talking to each other in your minds, but it's not like you just chilling out and having a conversation. You have to kind of open yourselves up to one another, and whatever you say in mind speak, you cannot consciously lie.
Right, because it has to be what's actually in your brain, I guess. It's obviously a form of telepathy.
Yep.
The first time the word telepathy was used in the book, it was actually a misprint in my copy, and I was wondering if there was going to be some weird form of it. Funny true story, it was T-E-L-E-P-H-A-T-H-Y. And I went, telepathy?
What is that?
Is that like a 1969 concept I didn't know about? And then, yeah, and that never happened again. Okay.
It was just a misprint.
Just a misprint.
And on a side note, I don't know exactly why this is, but Genli is teaching Estravan mind speak, and apparently Genli mind speaking to Estravan sounds like Estravan's dead lover. Blech.
Care to speculate rampantly?
What is that about?
Is that because Genli had basically become a brother to him at that point?
And they were gonna do it?
Yeah, no. Gaps. Yeah, I don't know if ship is the right word.
Yeah, I didn't really ship them, but like I did kind of, like, especially when Estermann said, oh, I'm going into Kemmer, I was like, well, he's always a guy, right. So, like, you guys doing it seems like it'd be fairly possible.
I think it was less a case of, oh, they love each other, and more a case of, when's there going to be some bone zone in this book?
Yeah, is anyone going to get it on? Yeah. Talk about it all the time, they never do it. Jeez.
I do like the idea of you being all analytical and reading the book and just being like, when's there going to be some fucking?
We also thought Fax was super hot, and then Fax was like, I'm celibate. And I was like, fuck you.
Fax and his wonderful, like, 8-pack of ads.
Yeah, like, apparently freaking gorgeous. I feel like Genli would have done him even if he was a dude. Like, I don't care, man. You hot?
Let's see. We already talked about the different versions of humanity, and then there's this thing called Doth Strength, which every Githenian seems to have access to.
It's going Hulk, man.
Basically, it is, yeah. You have, because just in normal day-to-day, it turns out that Genli is actually stronger than
Estravan.
And when he's in Doth Strength, Estravan, like, throws Genli over his shoulder like it's nothing.
And just, like, runs.
Chucks, like, yeah, miles. Like, sprints miles with him just slung over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
Throws him on a sledge, takes the sledge several miles into the wilderness, and then has to rest for a few days to recover from it.
Yeah,
but it's still, like, you were just carrying a whole person who's bigger than you like it was nothing.
Yeah. That's the opposite, or the downside to Doth Strength is that afterwards you have to spend a comparable amount of time recovering from it.
And one of the disciplines in Handara is one of the self-control things is you can learn to greatly extend your Doth Strength, which is apparently where he picked it up. So again, going back to that Eastern philosophy-ish type of quasi-religion where it's all about inner control. So, strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Well, it's easy to read. That's a point in its favor.
Yeah, I thought... Excuse me. I thought the world and the universe were interesting, but I didn't think that the characters were that engaging.
No, I didn't either. And for that matter, I didn't think the plot was... Or, that's not quite the right way to put it. I didn't think that the adventure survival portion of the story was all that engaging either.
Yeah, me neither. I read through it really fast. Like I was telling Ben, during that adventure part where they have to travel 800 miles on the ice, I knew they were going to make it through because Genli's talking in past tense, like, we went and did this.
Right, yeah.
And we know that he doesn't have a sound recorder while they're on their travels, so he definitely does it afterward. But at the same time, like, I didn't even really care if they made it across the ice. I was like, that would super suck to go, like, 700 miles on foot and then die.
But, yeah, it would.
Like, I didn't care that much. When Estravan died, like, eh.
Yeah, I was... I guess I was a little surprised because his actual death scene was pretty abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But past surprise, I don't think I was that invested either.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't upset. It was kind of like, oh, that doing that.
Sure, okay.
Wow, okay. I think I would have liked the book better, actually, if it was 100 pages longer and talked way more about the universe as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, if this had been Ursula K. Le Guin's encyclopedia of not Middle Earth, then I would have been into it.
And a little more character development would have been nice.
Yes, that would have been nice.
We always mention, if
we love good characters. You know we do.
And the relevance for the book, there's the fact that this actually won. Did it win a Hugo and a Nebula?
Yes, it did.
Which, as we mentioned with Doomsday Book, which also won a Hugo and a Nebula,
yes, it did.
That it's the two real big awards that science fiction hands out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, and it's a female author in a typically male-dominated setting.
Especially in 1969, when the original edition was published.
Yeah, I think Ursula K. Le Guin's now like in her 80s or something.
She's still kicking, apparently, though. And then the relevance to our current theme is the whole gender bending aspect of it, as we've mentioned several times. questions I had one, and that was, he made a reference to, kind of like warfare and conflict on a interplanetary, interstellar scale, not really being practical. Though they had their crisis of the age of the enemy fairly, well, historically, recently at least. I want to know about that. Where's that book? I would read that book in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and this book is kind of, it's not part of a series, but like part of a group of books that are all kind of in the same universe.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it at least, that they're not sequential, they're... I don't know if they even share any characters.
Yeah.
Or any worlds. They might explore different... She probably uses it just to explore different societies.
Yeah, different societies.
Kind of what I remember from The Dispossessed, which I read when I was really too young to understand it. And actually, as far as series go, for something I should have brought up probably way back at the beginning, but I bet a lot of you have at least heard of the Earthsea universe. Like, occasionally someone will make a shitty adaptation for it. I think Sci-Fi Channel made a really terrible adaptation of it.
Sci-Fi? Surprise.
And I think that, of all things, Studio Ghibli, like Miyazaki and those folks who made, like, Spirited Away, for those of you who remember that one, they actually did an Earthsea adaptation.
Really?
A few years ago, but that by all accounts is like one of the worst movies ever to come out of Japan.
True. That's interesting.
Yeah, because they usually do good stuff. Yeah, they usually do real good stuff.
Interesting.
So,
maybe your shit's just not possible to film well.
It's very possible, and when you take something that is hard to film well and you try to adapt it like a traditional film, then that usually doesn't work out too well for you anyway.
I was thinking it'd be pretty fun to see this book, just to see like them make all the actors and actresses androgynous, and to see if like they could pull off Genli just looking way like looking different, because he actually kind of looks like a man.
This one might actually work animated because of that.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have to. Though, I admit, it would be more fun to watch actual actors and actresses and try to play the guess who's a guy and who's a girl game.
Yeah.
If they did a good job of it.
Yeah.
And so, our verdict.
I thought it was okay.
I thought it was okay, but slightly more okay than Gab's.
What we have written on the outline is, I said, meh.
Meh plus. If we were grading it. On a scale of boo to yeah!
On a scale from 50 Shades of Grey to The Fault in Our Stars.
So solidly in the middle. So, what you reading right now?
I am reading Naomi and Eli's No Kiss List by David Levithan and Rachel Cohen. And it's just a cute YA book.
It's a cute title.
They say fuck a lot for having such a cute title.
But well, you know. I'm reading Boomerang by Michael Lewis of Moneyball fame, for those of you who keep track of these sorts of things. And it's about the financial crisis and how it cratered a bunch of the smaller European economies, essentially. So that's interesting if you're into that.
So if you would like to drop us a line, you can leave a comment at novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, sorry, Aria, you no longer have the...
yes, your exclusivity is gone. don't judge us.
You can find us on Twitter at novelideaspod.
And we are on iTunes, as long as they don't kick us off for having a shitty banner.
Yay!
So, next week, we are going to do Every Day by David Levithan.
Yeah, same guy, book I'm reading right now. And we don't know a whole lot about the book, but I know that David Levithan writes a lot of books with LGBT themes and characters, so I thought he would be a good one to check out.
And I gather this book has a little bit more of the gender bending in it.
Yeah.
In a different way than Left-Handed Darkness.
We'll see.
One would assume, at least. I don't know if it's cold at the beginning of the book. I might worry.
You might go, fuck it.
Damn it! So, anyway, I think that wraps it up. Yep. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.